Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really? Or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom! One sec, sweetie.
Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really?
Hey, parents. We all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I would have to do the same thing with the crew. We're looking and you're saying, how the hell are we going to do this?
Yeah.
You know, and then we would, you know, day by day, we would pick it apart. We'd figure it out.
Welcome to NCIS Partners and Probies. I'm Deanna Reisenover.
I can vouch for her. She is Deanna Reisenover. I'm Brian Dietzen.
And I play Casey Hines on NCIS.
I play Jimmy Palmer. And you are about to take part in a little adventure we call NCIS Partners and Probies, where we examine what makes NCIS the worldwide phenomenon that it is. In this episode, we are going to be talking with Mr. Mark Horowitz.
Executive producer of NCIS, director. He was on JAG. He's been on Doogie Howser.
He's done over 450 episodes of NCIS, so he's like a walking history book.
454. I actually know because I just read it on this card.
She counted earlier. She didn't read it on a card. This is what she does in her spare time. On this episode, we are going to be examining why does NCIS have these wonderful orange walls? What's the origin story there?
Mm-hmm. We're going to be getting into some of the early days of NCIS. What's it like to act in front of these orange walls? What's it like to direct in front of these orange walls?
And what's it like to work with actors who want to actually write for the show? How do you handle that as a producer? So you're going to want to stick around. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. And if there's one person to ask any question about NCIS, it's Mark Horowitz.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are here with NCIS executive producer Mark Horowitz. Mark, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So over, 450 episodes mm-hmm. of NCIS. Prior to that, how many episodes of JAG?
I was on JAG for another 7 years.
Wow.
So that's dozens of shows.
That would be dozens of shows.
Okay, listener, we're talking hundreds of episodes. And prior to that,
Then I worked for 20 years before that. So,
yeah,
I mean
Doogie Howser was up
yeah.
there.
Right? Spencer for Hire.
Spencer for Hire was yeah, up yeah. there. And you kind of fell in with a Don Belisario crowd at some point.
I did, and it happened on JAG.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I actually, just to go back a little bit, I became an assistant editor on the Rockford Files television show.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
And the associate producer was Charles Johnson.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
They were talking about the mid-70s, late-70s. And we've been friends and have been working together on and off ever since, like, 45 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we both went off and did different things at times, but we were, you know, certainly in contact. And then when he took over on JAG, the second season of JAG, it's moved to CBS, he called and said, would you please come play with me?
That's great.
And I said, awesome. Okay.
No, wait, hold on. I have to back up because I just realized that we know what an executive producer does, but everybody doesn't. So what exactly does an executive or an associate producer do? What's the difference, first off?
Executive producers, well, I like to say that my primary responsibility is to basically convince people to do things they don't really want to do. Would you say that's accurate? You would know more than...
I would concur with that.
Wait, can I do an impression? Hold
please
on.
Please do, please do.
Ring, ring, ring.
Yeah. Who is it?
Hello, Mr. Dietzen.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah. I love those calls.
We're going to need you to come in today.
Yeah, we're...
Okay, sure. Yeah, it was my day off. But yeah, I'll be there. Absolutely, sir. Yes. So, and in your capacity as an executive producer, you are not writing scripts so much as organizing absolutely every other facet of this show, including the tone and the story as well.
It was a wonderful place to come and work, and I was allowed to kind of make the job whatever I wanted to kind of make it. Nice. I could be as involved in it as I wanted to be, or as uninvolved in it as I wanted to be in terms of all the details. But I love, getting my hands dirty, and I love, just digging deep into all the little nitty gritty details, as well as, being involved in the big picture. So yes, it involved being involved in casting, a lot of work prepping the directors through the 7 days of prep when we would get a script. Where are we going to shoot? What's going to be a location? What sets are we going to build? How much is it going to cost? How much time is it going to take? All of those sort of issues that have to be worked on. And then this kind of story and script changes that needed to be made, sometimes for purely production reasons, and sometimes because we just felt there was there was more to it than that. There was more that could be done. And so that evolved over time and had a very, very good run. Had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. And you gave really excellent script notes. Like, it felt like you were really taking great care to make these scenes, like, as great as they could be, with great locations, great suggestions on changes. I think that was a little bit also of your directing eye, because you've directed some great episodes of NCIS, too.
Thank you. I think everyone on the show, certainly the cast, the department heads and the crew, I think part of the character of everyone who worked on the show was that they were also fans of the show.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And so everyone, had that instinct to try and, add a little bit extra. And our general rule on the set is the best idea wins. It doesn't matter where it came.
Meritocracy.
From.
Yeah.
It was really, and so constantly you're on the lookout, and people felt very open to jump in with an idea. And it might not work out this time around, but they'd be encouraged to please, don't stop pitching, because somewhere along the line we're going to hit something. And this happened all the time. And it was really, it was really fun sometimes to get a script that just seemed overwhelming on the page, and you think, oh my God, how are we going to shoot this thing in the time we have and the resources we have available to us? And then to get to the end of that shooting period, everyone sort of focused together and see it come to life and put it together and feel like, oh wow, we made a really good show. That was the thing that I think, fueled everyone and certainly me.
So now we know, what you do as an executive producer, what the job is, what the ins and outs are of that. I want to ask now about the history of this show. When Don Belisario comes to you and says, hey, we're going to do a little spin-off of JAG, and it's going to be a criminal investigative show in the vein of CSI, which was a huge show at the time, what was kind of the secret sauce that you felt this thing could be actually a hit TV show? And was that an immediate thing when you were shooting those two episodes of JAG, which were what's called a backdoor pilot? So, listener, that is for my mother-in-law, who's going to be asking what a backdoor pilot is, you shoot a couple of episodes of an existing show, which means that production kind of eats the cost of shooting a pilot. And then you get a pilot out of it to see if people would enjoy it. And so NCIS is a spin-off of JAG. Did you know right away in working on this thing that there's a potential for it to be a successful long-running show?
In the very beginning, nobody ever really knows.
Okay.
You know what I mean? we had done some JAG episodes that we would have an NCIS character involved.
Okay.
So it wasn't the first time. We understood, you know, what they did, that they were the law enforcement,
right.
You know.
Right.
And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when the original concept of NCIS was law and order in the Navy.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, there was
In fact, if you look at that pilot, those backdoor pilots from JAG, that's sort of what happened. We actually cast a whole new group of young JAG lawyers. Mm. And then we had, of course, the NCIS cast come in. And the front half of the show, theoretically, was going to be the crime.
Right, right.
And the back half of the show was going to be the court case.
Yeah. And one of those episodes was written by Don McGill, right? And then
that's
one was written by Don Belisario, right. Which is why there's two
people
credited.
Well, and they really co-created the show, technically.
Yeah.
So I think that was an original concept, or at least that what was used to pitch the show. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, Don decided, nah, we're not going to do that. And that flipped very fast. And I think the surprising thing that I didn't see coming was once we got to the NCIS scripts was how funny they were.
And I
said to Don, I said, I don't think anyone was expecting the humor. And he said, I've always had humor in my shows, which is true. If you go back and look at the Quantum Leaps or the Magnum.
Sure, yeah.
And he just has such a touch. He was so in touch with that kind of humanity, you know, mm-hmm. the drama that could be both things. And so that was the surprise. And he also was very, very good about watching the actors. So as the shows went on, he would start to find the strengths of each actor and each character now as they were developing them. And we would write to them. We wouldn't try and say, there was no preconceived notions about, oh, who this guy is, they have to behave like this. If this guy has this little quirk, well, we're gonna explore that quirk. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a big component of it. And another one of Don's philosophies was don't give it all away in the first season. Mm. Like every single thing about every single person, it's very easy to sort of, you know, grab all the low-hanging fruit of the story ideas and sort of just spew them all out. He thought in terms of 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, a series lasting a long time. And here you two are in season
23
seasons.
Wow.
How can that be?
I remember at the wrap of the first season, and I had only done 3 episodes. And I remember Don Belisario stood up on the stairs up to MTAC, and he said, "We've been picked up for a second season." And he said, but that's going to, and here's to a season 2 and a 3 and a 4 and a 5. No, this is the end of season 2. Season 3 and a 4 and a 5 and a 6, you know, and he was kind of calling his shots. And Harmon's eyes just kind of like went, you know, like, how can you be so certain sort of thing? You know, we're all happy to be on a top, 20 show at the time, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he really saw into the future. He saw what he wanted to.
He had had successes like that mm-hmm. in the past.
Yeah.
And he was a long-term thinker. And it's very, very rare. And I give CBS equal credit in as much as that show went on Tuesdays, you know, at 8:00, and it just stayed right where it was.
Yeah.
And they didn't fuss with it. They didn't move it around. They didn't make a lot of extraneous changes. They just let it be, let it find itself, because it takes time for a show to find itself.
Right.
Right.
And let it find its audience. And what was it really? Between season 3 and 4, or the beginning of season 4, is when things really kind of, you know, took off.
Fast forwarding a little bit, what do you think it was that kind of helped audiences connect to Mark specifically?
Well, the connection happened in the same way it still happens between the energy between all of you. I mean, it really is the chemistry between this cast, no matter how it's evolved over time. Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed. That's been, as far as I'm concerned, that's really been one of the most amazing things. You would think, all right, well, you know, Tony leaves the show. How could it possibly go on?
Right.
And Wilmer comes on and creates a different character and life goes on. And this, you know, the same is true with Pauly and you coming on. I mean, you just, everyone just seemed to accept it as long as they believed that there was real chemistry between these friends, this yeah. family.
Right.
If it still felt like a family, then, it still resonated with them. And, you know, I had always said the show is really about the kids trying to please dad. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the show.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares about the dead petty officer in Rock Creek Park. You know, they really just want to know, the kids want to know, did I please dad? Did yeah. I make him proud? Did I fail? Did I screw up? And then the other kids, you want to cut to those other kids and they're looking like, oh God, he's in so much trouble. Like, that's the show.
Yes, this show was built upon a lot of writers with a lot of dad issues.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
As long as you want, well, this, I'll tell you something. When I say that, the kids trying to please dad, especially in the initial years, what was going on in front of the camera was also going on behind the camera.
Oh, sure.
You had,
quite
honestly, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, Don.
You know what?
You had daddy.
Mark. Just go ahead.
Don, you know, also was a very big presence, mm-hmm. and people wanted to please Don. You know, so that whole dynamic was happening all over the place.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The Homeworks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
You had mentioned earlier that you know this show was going along well through seasons 2 and 3 and whatnot, and then it kind of hit 4. And it really, the show vaulted. It really went up in the ratings. It really went up just in pop culture in general. Like, it became a much more of a phenomenon. And after that is when it became the number one show in the United States shortly thereafter. What was it about season 4? Did it have to do with character development? Did it have to do with the syndication stuff that was going on? Tell us a story about that.
That's really it. And this had happened on JAG as well.
Okay.
We got into the first 100 episodes or whatever the number is that they needed to sell to syndication.
Yeah, like 80 mm-hmm. something. So in television, for everyone listening, mm-hmm. When a show back in the day, this doesn't happen so much anymore, when you hit a certain number, say 80 episodes, 100 episodes, a cable company or an entertainment conglomerate can buy all the rights to those episodes and play them on repeat on your favorite channel, say USA or TNT, something like that back then. But anyhow, go on.
This had happened on JAG between seasons 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. It started playing on, USA Network. And yes. They started mm-hmm. running them, you know, all day long.
Yeah.
And at first blush, I would think, doesn't this just dilute the audience? I mean, aren't they just going to get sick of everything? But that's not the way it works. They're two separate audiences. Oh. And so the same thing happened on NCIS. People would start watching these marathons. They hadn't seen the show on network. Mm-hmm. They're cable watchers. Yeah. They could watch 10 episodes in a row. And now by the end of the summer, they've caught up.
Yeah.
And they don't feel like they're out of the loop. They go, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, I could watch the latest version of this. Yeah. And suddenly we have this whole influx of new viewers watching. So that was, that was a miracle. That was just a wonderful, wonderful way to celebrate the show, to have the show mm-hmm. be seen by so many people.
And with streaming, I don't think that happens.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I was just, as you were telling me that, I was thinking how much things have changed, obviously. They've changed with syndication and they've changed with streaming and, not same day viewing. But I was also thinking about, oh my gosh, you were on the show for so long. You saw us through so many changes that people don't know about. Not just like cast changes, but I mean, you saw us through the writer strike, both writer strikes actually. COVID, you are a fearless leader. You really got us off the ground I didn't know if we were gonna be able to shoot. How did you navigate such big changes and still keep a cool head?
Like I said, we were so fortunate to have a group of people making the show. And I include, every member of the cast as, the integral ingredient, the real reason for its success, in addition to the writing. But we had a group of people that had worked together for so long. I mean, many people, 20 or 30 of us came from JAG. Yeah. And then we supplemented, crew members from there. So people have been working together for 10 years, 20, 27 years by the time that I had left. You develop a little shorthand, you develop a little, I think we're going to do one of these and one of these, you didn't have to talk about a lot of stuff. Everybody kind of knew how it worked. And we, as I said, we came up with a system that was inclined to succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it had to do with, this wasn't some thought out plan that I came up with. This just happened. It had to do with built-in redundancies. Mm. And that had to do with the fact that people cared about each other.
Yeah.
And so when something went awry, as it often does, best laid plans, there was no finger pointing or, oh my God, we're going to. Other people just came in and helped fix the problem. Mm-hmm. Or if they saw the train was about to go off the track, they would just go, they wouldn't come to me. They would just go to their buddy and they would take care of it.
Yeah.
Like that's sort of how it's done. And, you asked about COVID and I thought it was a miracle, quite frankly, that we were able to sort of keep shooting and filming, and we had to change everything that we did.
Yeah.
The whole television making process is about bringing people together. And now we suddenly had to do this, but separate everyone. That was the trick. But it worked because you had a group of people who really cared about one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the success of that.
Yeah, I think people don't know. So normally when you're filming, everybody's kind of all in the same room. You're coming. There's a lot of group meetings, a lot of kind of talking together. And this really was, we were testing multiple times a week, which is good. Lots of masks, lots of like, okay, last looks and you're taking off your mask and all your makeup's been wiped off. but I think that you did, I just want to compliment you, and there's no question behind this, and just say like, anytime I got nervous, I looked to you. I really did. And you were such a great leader and you really got us through that.
Well, that's very kind. That's very kind. Now, I want to ask you guys a question.
Cool. Because,
cast members on NCIS, you are the two that not only have these wonderful characters and are terrific actors, but you're also writers. And you have written episodes of NCIS, which, on a lot of shows, well, maybe somebody directs an episode or two, but there's not too many shows I know where the actors also write.
Yeah.
So would you guys like to talk a little bit about that? I think people would be very interested. Well, we could start with you because
let me say something real quick. Remember how I said he's a fearless leader? You see how he has led this conversation?
He's like, turn you want to podcast me? I want to podcast you.
But it's a good story.
Oh, how the turntables.
Only if then after you will talk about your experience of executive producing and directing.
And directing simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I can do that.
Yes, for us, for writing, I remember this came up for me, when David McCallum was starting to work a little bit less and less, and I was getting some scripts, and I said, I remember saying to Steve Binder at one point, who was running our show alongside Frank Ardea, and I said to him, you know, it feels like a lot of my dialogue it feels like an elderly Scottish man is saying it, and it feels like maybe like we could jimmy up this thing, and Steve on his way out the door goes, hey, look, if you think you can do better, just do it. All right, you're a writer, you've written a feature, just do it. And he left, and I'm like, okay, cool. And I went home and I wrote, you know, 10, 12 pages and just of scenes. And I called him the next day and said, hey, remember how you said I should just write it? And he goes, oh yeah, I meant to call you. I was kind of short with you. I didn't mean to be an asshole, but I just, you know, my apologies. I said, no, I wrote some pages for you. And so I sent him over to him and he goes, oh. Do you want to write an episode?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And I said, yeah, sure, I will. So I co-wrote a few episodes with, I think three episodes with Scott Williams.
What was the first episode?
The first episode was the two of us, called The Helpers.
Yes, where we The Helpers.
You also had some great ideas on the Ledge one, didn't you?
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, I mean, like, I had a lot of input on that one. I didn't sit down at the.
That was a pretty great show.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was called Keep Going in season 14.
Terrence O'Hara, God bless him.
Oh, Terrence O'Hara.
That was a wonderful, wonderful episode. So I got to actually officially co-write three scripts. Then I just did one with Jesse Stern as well. He returned for one this season. And it's wonderful to do. And I got to say, one of the reasons that either of us can write anything on the show is because we're not working 8 days. It takes us 8 days to shoot an episode. We're not working 8 days. We're working 3 days or sometimes four, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it enables us to do that. You don't have such a luxury.
Well, it gives you the time. But you have to also have the talent. You know. And what was very interesting about both of you, and Turkey Trot, I want to say, was your first episode.
And that was my first time getting to work to see you in your like EP giving notes glory, because you had some great ideas that really, for me, turned the script around and that really made it a lot better. So I was really happy about that.
Well, you're both very talented. I mean, you were very, and it was interesting when the word went out that both of you, you know, were going to be writing on the show. In some circumstances, that might make people's heads explode. But in this particular circumstance, people were like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Can they write? Oh, yeah. They're available? Great. Get them to work. Like there was a need.
Yeah.
And people, you know, were very excited about it. And you did great shows.
Well, yes. It's interesting that you bring this up, because I feel as though that sort of culture that you breed on a TV show, where an actor can come forth and say, can I do this thing? Or I'd like to explore this. Rocky Carroll wants to start directing, and now he's done over 25 shows on NCIS. That starts from the top, you know, of enabling your cast, your crew, to move up through the ranks. Now, granted, it may be a little difficult on our show because no one wants to leave, so you don't see a lot of people.
It's like Brigadoon.
Moving up through
it's
different.
It's the land that time forgot. There,
but the ability to have an executive producer say, "Yeah, why don't you try that out? Let's see what happens." You know, that's not a common thing right now, especially in the land of I want to do everything.
It's a special group of people.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It really is a special group of people and a very special atmosphere to work in. And you feel it on the screen. Yeah. The audience feels it, that there's real chemistry. There's a genuine attachment. People are having, it looks like they're having a good time. Well, they are. Yeah. They are having. Yeah, they're having a really good time.
Yeah.
And I always I love to draw the musical metaphor that working with the actors on NCIS is sort of like working with really great jazz musicians. Yeah, they can read the notes on the page, but what they really can do is riff with one another and find something, find some moment in these scenes that wasn't obvious, that no one had really thought about.
Yeah.
And those were the moments that certainly as a director and also as a producer, that would just, that's what I live for. Like when that, when I'd be surprised by something like that, that some little nugget of something that would be found just because the actors were in it. That's a really special circumstance.
And this is, see, this is reminds me of the way that you direct, because you really did let us play and it was beautiful. And I'm just curious how with a big episode like She, which that's the one where Ziva comes back and Bishop is having this like, you know, big sort of crisis. When you have so many stunts because, you know, she has that big dive in the water, there's the shootout that happens.
Beautiful.
How are you still able to allow for those beautiful jazz moments when you have so many big set pieces?
Well, you know, certain things you have to kind of focus in on and and kind of do. Certainly when you're working around water, kids, you know, those are things you have to focus on. But this was a script, you know, written by Gina Monreal. And it's, and you know, from the first day it was, it came out, it just rocked, you know, I mean, it had everything in it. And when that happens, when the script comes out and all the emotions are true, all the motivations are true, everybody feels it. You know, the cast feels it. All the department heads get it. Everybody just gets on board. And so it just makes the rest of it, it gives you time and a space to sort of, okay, this is all going to work. And let's see what else might come out of this, you know. And Gina was very open to that kind of thing as well. You thought something was going to go a certain way, but it didn't really go there. Went this way instead. Well, you know, that's damn good. Let's just live. Let's go with that and see what happens. And the bigger pieces, like, you know, technical things, people working in and out of water and stuff, those you had to storyboard out and, you know, be more, a little more specific about.
Oh, I'm so...
So when you look back on your tenure on NCIS, we talked over a couple really cool moments and episodes. What's something that stands out to you that you just say, look, whether I was a producer on this show or I'm just a fan of it, like I'm really moved by this moment or this episode or this era even of NCIS. Like, is there something that to you can point to and say that kind of unlocks why people like this show? Because it affects me personally.
You know, I would say on our more successful shows, and we did this the great majority of time, the last 5 minutes of the show. If you can leave an emotional memory with that audience in those final scenes, if you can make everybody just like right now, I'm just getting
them. Yes.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Some little, you know, and it works because you haven't worked towards a result. It came from the inside out. And the audience was with that the whole time. They're right there with you. They're right in the room with you. Or you're right in the room with them.
Oh.
And when you can get to the ending and they feel the love between the characters and something really emotional happens and you leave them with that, even if they can't remember, you know, a week from now, what that scene was even about or what the dialogue was about, they have that emotional memory locked in. That's what I think brings people back to the show.
And it really is, like you just said, like that last 45 seconds, minute 45 seconds, something like that, that has saved many a, you know, good show, good episode. But then all of a sudden it is remembered as something much more because it remembers to come back to say, why are we even doing this thing?
Yeah.
It's about human connection. That's why we're doing it.
Exactly.
And if you leave it on that note, that's the flavor people are left with. And that's really, I think you're hitting on it. That's what NCIS is for sure.
All right. Here's a fun fact.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
I see they've built this beautiful set for your podcast. I thought I was going to be joining on Zoom with headphones or something. Here I am. I'm in the squad room in the correct colors. And compliments to the art directors here who put this all together. And there's a little history behind how we ended up with
this orange set. Yes.
Where did this come from?
And because I've heard a lot of complaints, and over there, people get sick of, do I have to work in this orange room anymore?
The big orange room.
Which I think gives our show a certain distinction because there's no other show that, you know.
No.
When you're clicking through, when you see that orange wall, you know what show you're watching. Don was looking for, you know, a space. And in his mind originally, that squad room was a small space. Mm. It was not a large space. It was a small kind of techie kind of thing. And we went out and looked at some various locations. This is for the spinoff pilot. We hadn't built a set yet. And we went to, it was the old Epson building in El Segundo. And it looked a lot like our squad room. It had, it actually had a big pyramid ceiling that was translucent. And the light came down and kind of focused on the center of the room. And the walls around it kind of fell off. So even from a lighting standpoint, it had that feeling, and it was this color. And that's where we shot the scenes for the spinoff episodes. Wow. If you watch those last two JAG episodes, you'll see that set. And then when the show was sold, we had to build something that ended up looking a lot like that. So and we did. And that is why these particular colors were chosen for that.
This particular shade of orange really just kind of gets in your craw and you can't forget it. And I will tell you how I know that is I won't talk about myself too much. I accidentally painted my living room this color. And my wife hasn't realized it yet, but like as soon as I went back to work after hiatus, I was like, I'm in so much trouble.
That's very funny. That's fantastic.
How do you accidentally paint
it? It was
subconscious. It's emotional memory you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, that's a good one because it means you don't mind bringing your work.
I bring my work home. That's true. Should we do a probie question?
Yes.
Oh, let's
do
a probie question.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 45% off site-wide, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
These are probies. These are members of the NCIS fan base, which are all the probies of the show.
God bless every one of them.
Exactly. Let me see.
We also, I just have to say, we do have the greatest fans in the world.
We really do.
Everywhere.
Mark, this is why we have a podcast.
Yes.
You know, whether it's somebody's aunt or grandmother or on a college campus. It never stops. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
About this directing, yeah.
Yes. What was your favorite? This is Logan. He's asking, I don't know if Logan's a he or she, but they are asking your favorite episode to direct that you've directed.
Oh, gee.
Also, if you want to get saucy with it, what's your least favorite episode you've directed?
Oh, well. Let's get
or
the
produced.
Juice.
You know, I really enjoyed all the episodes that I directed there. I was very fortunate and had terrific scripts. Always fun to bring on guest cast members and, you know, introduce them into the group. That was always, that dynamic is always, you know, exciting.
Yeah.
She was a pretty good show.
She was a great show.
And I did another one, I think that David North wrote, called, and maybe David and Steve, called On Fire, which was also another a bishop-centric show.
That was another
show.
Bishop show. Yeah.
And those were, I would say both of those were, I had a lot of fun.
I'm going to.
And she was incredible because it was about a character that we never saw in a way. I mean, Emily Wickersham was incredible within
the show. Emily came into that thing.
So good.
And I think I was telling you this on the phone the other day. She locked in on both those shows.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think especially she, I was just thinking about the scene that we did in a hallway of a hospital. And we did a rehearsal and we just rolled and it was great. And I remember going to her and just saying, okay, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just do that. That's all. I have no other note. Let me just get out of your way. You know exactly what's going on. And, you know, that's really fun too when somebody's just got, or if you want to do more. Do more.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Whatever. That was a lot of fun.
I want to redirect this least favorite to direct. Is there anything that either producing or directing, you got the script, you read it, and you went, I have no idea how we're going to make that happen. What? Is there anything that just kind of made your
this
mind
happened
twist?
Absolutely every single week. Every single week.
Fair.
And, you know, there was a period of time when Gary Glassberg was producing the show.
Mm-hmm.
Our dear friend has passed away, who took over as executive producer. And, you know, part of my job in my position was to really help the person who's the showrunner of the show, whether it was Don or whether it was Gary or Shane Brennan or Steve or George and Frank, because it's a tough job.
Yeah.
That showrunning position is just impossible. So part of my job was just make their life a little bit easier, as easy as possible. But there were times that these scripts would come out, and I'd be on the phone, on the drive up, of course, with Gary saying, how are we, I would have to go through my little, you know, sort of vomit to get all the, like, how are we going to do this? But I had to always go through it, and Gary was very, very sweet. He would just take it. And then I, you know, by the end of a call, I'd say, all right, we'll figure out something. And then that's usually where it started.
Yeah,
and then I would have to do this. I would have to do the same thing with the crew, or looking at me saying, how the hell are we going to do this? And then we would, you know, day by day, we would pick it apart. We'd figure it out. Maybe we'd make it a little simpler. Or maybe we'd, you know, find another angle. Like I said, when we'd get to the end of that and it worked.
Yeah.
Then you sort of felt like you'd accomplished, you know, something. So it was always sort of, those difficult things turned into satisfaction at the end.
Well, so speaking of, you were there since the very, very beginning, since the JAG spinoffs on NCIS. How has producing the show changed between the first days of say the JAG episodes up until the end of your tenure there? I mean, the entertainment industry in general has changed just immensely. How we view the numbers, how people even view our television show is changing, seems daily. The process of actually making the show, was that processed, altered quite a bit over the course of, say, 18 years?
I would say it was harder in the beginning, as it often is on a new show. You know, it's, like I said, it needs time to find itself, and that takes experimentation, and that takes people time. And you know, and Don was involved. The bar was set very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of work to do. You know, we worked a lot of hours. And the show was shot as a counterpoint to JAG. NCIS, from a design standpoint, JAG was very sort of fluid, like a 1930s, you know, or 40s movie, shot very classically. He didn't want it to look like, he didn't want NCIS to look like that. So we shot NCIS almost like a rock video with three cameras all the time, you know, crossing the line and people looking in different angles and lots of fast cutting, 70-page scripts in the first 3 years on a 42-minute or 43-minute show. So, you know, and Don's technique was he would rehearse with the actors, and when he was directing, and they would do the scene, he'd say, okay, that was great. Now do it twice as fast. And because he would try and get as much as he could into, you know, each episode. So they really move. If you look at those first 3 years, God, they're just rocking. So that started to sort of calm down a little bit, you know, as we got into seasons 4 and 5 and 6. And then we kind of found a groove, you know. Mm-hmm. There were still, you know, some shows that were harder than other shows. But as I said, our little world up there, I always felt it was akin to, you know, living in Brigadoon. You know, we were sort of left out in the Tulies, in the northeast part of Southern California. And not a whole lot of people came up to visit us. We didn't, no. Not a lot of network people. Once every 100 episodes, somebody would come up and say hello.
TMZ, they rarely visit our set.
we were kind of left on our own, which, you know, it's really all you can ask for. You know, there are people, and this was done mainly because they trusted us.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious. We became the show at CBS that they didn't have to worry about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that was our goal. You know, they had other pilots and other shows that were, you know, the problem child of the week, mm-hmm. and then they didn't have to. We were going to do the show. We would make it as good as we possibly could. We would do it on time. We'd do it within our budget. Everybody was having a good time, and we tried to fix any little problems that we're having internally, so that our good friends down at the executive offices didn't have to worry about us.
This brings me to the question that I was like, oh, I need to ask it, but it also makes me sad. I want to ask you about your decision when you decided to retire, which of course made me cry. I think I did a pretty good job on that phone call going, okay, but I was trying to hide it, my worst acting. But I want to ask you about your decision to step away from NCIS.
Well, you know, it was, we were in season 20, which had a nice round number, you know. It was a nice nice ending, kind of. You don't want to say I did 21 years. No, I did 20 years on NCIS. I had a nice sort of feeling about it. And as I, you know, we talked about, I'd worked for 30 years before that on various other shows and in capacity. So I'd been working for a long time. And it just seemed like this, you know, this would be a good time to kind of go to that next phase. And there were other things that I wanted to be able to do more of and spend more time with my family. And I have, you know, little hobbies and things that, you know, that I like to do. I like to take pictures. And I'm a musician. I like to play, you know, music. And so this, I wanted to have a chunk of time to do that, because as lovely and wonderful as the show was to do, it becomes the primary focus of one's life, you know, whether you're doing it, even when you get home, you know, there's work to do on the phone, you're reading scripts, wherever you are, you're always thinking about it. And I just thought it'd be nice to have a chunk of time in life where I didn't have to sort of do that.
You do, saying that you like to take pictures, I think is a little bit of an understatement. You take absolutely gorgeous pictures.
Thank you.
When are you going to publish them?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of these things that I've thought about, and it's, and I kind of want to make it a real project and not just a little hobby project. So I'm working on it. Most of, you know, a lot of stuff that I shot on NCIS for a long time was shot on film. So I'm going back now to the original negatives and just kind of cataloging all of that and archiving it so I know where everything is. And then I think that's something that I might get into in the next year or so. Put something together, a little coffee table book.
I think you would have some buyers. I do. I mean, the amount of if I've posted a few of your images to social media and whatnot, just you know, especially after David McCallum passed, you had so many amazing pictures of him, of he and I that I shared with his family, and it's emotional. It's really emotional looking at your stuff, especially the black and whites that you took. It was absolutely incredible. So if ever you decide to do so, I'm pre-ordering right now.
I'll be sending your release forms. That's what it's going to take. I have to get everyone to sign off.
You take Apple Pay, right? You take Apple Pay.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, man. Thank you so much for coming here today. This is
a pleasure.
This has been absolutely
incredible.
I'm so proud
of both of you. Look at you. You got your own podcast.
What a great walk down memory lane. I tell you what, we got plenty of people to come in through here and whatnot, but very few people have such an understanding and are such a historian and love this show like you do. And thank you so much for taking time to do it.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, we love you, Mark. Thank you so much to Mark Horowitz, a friend of the show, also a wonderful EP, director of NCIS.
And a wonderful photographer. We're definitely going to have him come back and do a bunch of our key art and make sure that Partners and Probies looks absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for listening. And please listen to all future episodes of NCIS Partners and Probies wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube.
Follow and listen to NCIS Partners and Probies on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.